Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, the weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene. This Week in Craft Beer publishes the UK's leading craft beer newsletter every Monday morning by email. To subscribe for free, please visit www.thisweekincraft.beer. This Week in Craft Beer would like to thank our generous Patreon supporters, Phantom Brewing Co., Bayonet Brewing Co., Dolphin Brewery, Berkshire Beer Box, The Small Batch Brewing Co., Belgium and Blues Southampton, Doug Thayer, Robert Baker, Aid Bardi, The Brew Brothers, Paul Whelan, Bettina Cassidy, Forks Brewery, Claire Costa, James Cox, Craig Hatton, James Moss, John Mead and Craft Beerings. I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast this afternoon Alex from the Hive Craft Beer and Coffee Shop based in Crowthorne, Berkshire. Alex and Emma opened the Hive in 2020 and it quickly established a reputation as arguably the best stocked and all around nicest bottle shop and tap room in the Thames Valley. Alex, please introduce yourself and tell us about your beer journey which led you to launching the Hive.
Hi, thank you. So yeah, I'm Alex and I started the Hive with my wife Emma after a good few years of planning and passionately trying to find somewhere to open. And yeah, thankfully it's kind of taken off and we have a really good customer base. And it kind of all started from a trip to Manchester.
Okay.
Where my brother-in-law was living in Warrington.
Yeah.
And we took a day trip over to Knutsford.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Dexter and Jones.
Yeah.
Back in the day when it was just a one shop. And that was the real seed of, I could envision what we wanted to do in terms of the bottle shop side. And we already had the idea of the coffee shop and how.
And that would have been mid-2010s, would it sort of 2014, 15 or?
Yeah, I think about 2016, 2017, something
okay,
like that.
Yeah.
Maybe a few years before. Yeah, I toyed with the idea ever since the passion really got into me of craft beer. It was like, there was nothing. There's nowhere for me to go that wasn't an industrial estate.
No.
Locally, around this area, there isn't anything really bar your run-of-the-mill pub.
Yeah.
So all of our friends moved away to somewhere, you know, nicer, flashier, that had lovely beers, lovely pubs. And you'd come back and you'd, damn, why haven't we got that here?
And when you say here, I mean, I might take issue with Crowthorne itself. It's lovely, isn't it? So whereabouts were you growing up? Yeah, where was your, you know, what was your base when you were thinking about looking for a premises?
So yeah, I live in Sandhurst, which is just down the road,
right,
the next sort of village along, and it's a lovely place.
Yeah,
that's why we've never moved. But in terms of, I think once we got into craft beer, then your eyes are open to.
Oh yeah.
Ah, okay. I can't actually drink it anywhere.
No.
So I'd sort of, you know, like many people do, you peer over the bar to see what's in the fridge, see if there's anything exciting.
Yeah,
in there.
And your heart sinks, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know, you might see a punk IPA, and that's about it. Yeah.
If you're lucky, it's courage best, rather.
No.
Yeah, then it's like, oh, okay, I'm off to like elusive.
Yep.
So,
well, you got. I mean, that's it's fair to say. I mean, that's your closest, I guess. Well, what's your closest tap room, sir? It was the Elusive Siren.
Combination,
which is not too far away from here, is it?
No, not at all. No, it's literally probably a 10-minute walk, a 10-minute drive, sorry.
Yeah.
That was my religious Friday stop. Must have gone by everything new they had.
Mm.
And then either have a few there or, you know, bring them back and drink in the shed.
Yeah.
So that's what spawned the idea for the Hive, really, was our first shed bar.
Just take a step back slightly earlier than that. So what were your earliest sort of recollections of getting into craft beer in the first place? You know, your formative drinking years, presumably drinking macro lagers and cask bitters, if you could get them more.
I spent 10 years on run-of-the-mill, dreadful lagers.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
Used to play for a pool team, so,
okay,
you know.
Yes.
You drink what you can when,
of course you do, yeah.
When you're around.
Means to an end, yeah.
And then I guess I started really just experimenting with other stuff on cask and just delved into cask beers and started drinking a lot of Badger and, you know, kind of went from there. And then I think probably Siren back in the day, when I first went there, when they didn't even have a tap room.
No.
When it was
it was several years, the brewery was there before they opened the tap, wasn't it?
Yeah, you just knock on, used to go through the office
and
be like, can I get a beer? And they'd, go and pour. And I think my first pour of Soundwave back in the day, that was the eye opener of this is something.
There are several extra levels I wasn't aware of.
And then from there, that's it. I just became a bit obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bit of a hoarder anyway and a collector, okay. So it was a natural progression for my brain of, okay, this is good. So everything's different, everything's small batch. Oh, brilliant. So
did that manifest itself in an untapped account and lots of, you know, unique check-ins? Or
no, to be fair, I was fairly... Because there wasn't many people I knew that were into craft beer. I kind of got everyone else into
it
exactly around me.
I'm exactly the same, yeah.
So, the untapped came much later, but the collecting... Mm-hmm. So I collected everything Siren did in bottles
And
had that all displayed in the shed bar, which when you look around the hive, it all makes sense.
It does, yeah, absolutely. We'll get to that. But so, it really does.
Always recycle. And yeah, it kind of kept from then of like, okay, I could then track everything I drunk and rate it and put it into place. And then any new breweries I found, get a beer, it would have a place. So I could then tell people about it. And it becomes quite obsessive.
I mean, you were rehearsing for running this place, basically, weren't you, in your mind, it sounds like?
Yeah, definitely.
So you figured that... So you mentioned already, you know, Emma had plans to open a coffee shop anyway, did she? Or, you know, did that sort of come together at the same time as you thinking about the bar?
Yeah, no, we both did, really. Kind of, Emma got into the beer as well as I, probably a little bit later. But we both wanted to do something ourselves, run our own business. And worked for British Airways, so had that like kind of hospitality side.
Yeah,
and we both worked in hospitality. That's how we met. So we had that background,
right?
And we just wanted to do something for ourselves and something that wasn't represented, really.
Yeah,
and just create something that was a bit more unique.
Yeah,
and we just kind of did from there. And as you do, right, many lists of what we wanted.
Yeah,
and. Obviously, craft beer was top, coffee was second, I think dogs were third, or cheese was third, sorry, dogs were fourth.
So you set out to find a premises to open what we're looking at here now. How long did that take?
Maybe about a year and a half.
Okay.
We looked at a few different locations. We looked at Wokingham, Hardy Whitney, Camberley, Sandhurst, where we're from, and Crowthorne, and then... nothing really quite worked out. There was a lovely place I saw in Wokingham, but it was literally a cupboard.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful cupboard.
Was it?
it had like butcher's hooks everywhere. So it had the old wood and it was beautiful, but...
just not practical.
Ridiculously tiny.
You'd get enough people in there, yeah.
No, I could fit in there. I would have been happy. And then we stumbled upon this. Someone gave me a bit of a heads up.
Yeah.
And as soon as I walked in, it was quirky enough that I could see...
Yeah.
What we could do, and it had, you know, had little rooms, had little opportunities to do something of a difference. So
it is an unusual space and size, isn't it? For, you know, it's not quite a single shop front. You know, it's more than that, isn't it? But not quite a double shop front.
It's
got double frontage, but not double.
Well, one and a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it used to be this bit we're in used to be a sweet shop.
Oh, okay.
Way back in the day,
right. And so it was two separate units, you know.
Yeah. This was just a walkway back in the day.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I've kind of traced the history back.
Yeah.
A little bit. It used to be a Threshers.
Yeah. Okay.
In the mid 90s, and I tried to buy alcohol in here when I was 15, and they
that's a great
historical failed
anecdote.
Failed, but
probably for the best. Yeah.
But yeah, now I've got the last laugh in a way.
Yes. But it's. The way you've got it configured, you walk in from the street, you've got a big space with the bar, you know, down the back sort of left-hand corner of the main space. But we're sitting in a lovely little alcove here with seating for, 10, 12, I suppose, 40, if you're good friends on this table. common to the entire premises, it's beautifully decorated. This whole place, I think, is super classy, the way you've got it set up. I mean, you know, it oozes... quality, doesn't it? You know, from the quality of the furnishings to the decor to the toilets, which are spectacular. I just think the whole thing is delightful, and you know, it's an absolute credit to you that, you know, it's obviously cost a lot of money to kit it out like this, and I think, you know, it's money well spent. You know.
Not exactly.
Okay.
I'll thank my brother for the toilets.
Yeah. All right.
On your behalf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else, to be fair, the furniture I make most of it.
Oh wow.
So it's everything's recycled, and
I
hoard from Marketplace, and you know,
oh, do you?
I like everything to have a history of like where stuff like that bar top is a Victorian skirting board.
Is it?
But it was literally that size.
A very big skirting board. Yeah. It must have been a big room.
You can't throw that away.
No.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So little things like that, little quirks of like, I can point to little bits of furniture and be like, I kind of know where I got it from.
But the whole, you know, I've been in a lot of tap rooms and you know, sort of craft beer venues over the last few years, more than's probably good for me. And you know, a lot of them are kind of, you know, kitted out on a shoestring and sort of done eclectically, and they're all each charming in their own way, but very few, you know, have got the sense of quality and execution of this place. So I think you've done an amazing job with it. You know, the obvious, going back to a comment you made in the introduction, you know, the overwhelming sort of decor is the you know, the packet, the small pack containers themselves, mostly cans, but I'm, you know, looking up at some lovely bottles on the top shelf there. You know, you've made full use of you know, the wonderful resource that is craft beer artwork.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to create your own artwork, do you? Because the breweries are doing it for you to some extent. It's
no, and it's, I mean, I have a real struggle throwing stuff away when it looks that good. So all of my staff keep all the cans that are drunk in.
Right. And just on the off chance that you might get cross if they throw them away.
I then go through them and see which ones I want to keep and hoard for the next project.
So, I mean, you know, we've got a dedicated Vibrant Forest cabinet over on one wall there, and a dedicated Phantom cabinet here. So they're beautifully done. I think the other, mostly, is there another dedicated cabinet here, or are they mostly
there's a double-barreled and an elusive up the corridor.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, nice.
And then the back, the beer den, is a bit of a homage to Polly's, amongst others. But
And is there a geographic organisation to it as well, or am I overthinking it, or is it?
No.
No. You're going to have to do that this evening, aren't you?
Oh, I don't.
You can't as
soon as somebody plants a seed like that, I'm like, it's a challenge. Oh, damn it, I'm going to have to alphabeticalise it.
Sorry. But it does work beautifully, and you know, it's just such a nice thing to sit and look at. Oh, I remember that beer. Wow, look at that. That was a great beer. And it's, you know, I'm sure people come in here and probably ask to buy some of these and say, no, sorry, mate, you missed that 3 years ago.
Especially up in the beer den, there's quite a few hundred up there.
Yeah.
And I do have to go around and, like, you know, pinch them so they keep their shape, because the amount of people that poke them to see if they're still full.
Oh, no. That's annoying.
There's a couple of full beer there, obviously.
No, I've
drunk it. You know. I remember that one. It was good.
Yes. That'd be terribly tempting as well, wouldn't it? Let's talk about his first beer, Alex, that we're both cracking into. This is Pentridge Dying Embers, 5.2% dark lager. Tasty notes say a deep amber-coloured lager hopped with Hallertau Mittelfrühe. The dark malts provide sweet caramel and subtle roast flavours with light bready notes and light spicy hop notes. Lovely. This is by far my favourite sub-style of lager is dark lagers. I don't see them. In fact, you very rarely see them, do you? Which is why I immediately sort of honed in on this. And I wanted to drink it because I also love Pentridge as a brewery. I think they're
100%.
They're good friends of This Week in Craft Beer. And I don't think they get the love and respect they deserve in the UK. Quite. So, you know, they're a small brewery, and, you know, I'm sure they're doing fine. But I don't feel like they're mentioned as often as they should be in the, you know, in people's lists of the best UK breweries, because I think they're up there and have been for a number of years.
Yeah, 100%. We've had them in before, we've had them on tap, and I think we've still got some in the bottle shop themselves, but I had like a session Pentridge on cask at the Nags.
Oh, yeah.
Just before Christmas, I think. And it was just, I think it's the best cask beer I think I've ever had.
Oh, wow.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of
it's
like high really.
Price indeed, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't drink cask much.
No.
Because I don't, you know, I don't get out anywhere near as much as I want to, because I'm always here, and we don't have casks, unfortunately. So, yeah, it's just like, if I see something interesting on cask,
I've discussed this on this podcast before, and, you know, with Joe from Pentridge, but, you know, I know for a fact that Joe brews cask beer to please himself, not because it makes any kind of economic sense to do so. So, you know, he has certain styles of beer he likes to drink on cask, which veers way into the craft end of the spectrum compared to what most breweries are prepared to put into cask. So, you know, Joe will put full on New England IPAs into cask.
Oh, it was.
Purely
it was,
just to
yeah.
please himself.
I was quite surprised when he poured it. I was like,
yeah.
Wow, this is amazing. Yeah, it was really good. And ever since then, I was like, right, actually, yeah, I do need to get some more Pentridge in.
So we've had him on. It makes no economic sense to hop cask beers to the level that they do.
No, but it's
but if you ever
incredibly
see one,
pleasing.
If you see one, grab it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you're not going to be disappointed. And so, yeah, but you know, look, dark lagers, great. You know, it's just a really interesting style. This is lovely. You know, lovely caramel notes to this, but beautiful colour to it. Just yeah, really pleasing beer.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting reason why we've got it in a way, because we've only got six taps, so we don't have a lager always on.
No.
At all, just because there's way too much beer and styles to get on.
Yeah,
you
can't
always
mix
it up.
Please everybody with six taps, can you?
So everyone always asks, you know, do you have a lager on? If someone comes in a group, there may be one lager drinker. So we've got them in the fridge and everything. But when I do get one in, I like to make it an interesting one.
Yeah.
So this is especially, we had it on at the weekend, and the amount of people that were looking at it, you know, like we try a little bit first and they're expecting a nice...
Straw-coloured.
And this just looks incredible. So
it does,
it's like, yeah, it's really interesting. It's like, try this. This is proper.
Yeah.
And I mean, the tasting notes literally sell it perfectly.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, really good. The dark malts in there. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, really happy with this.
Yeah, and it, you know, it doesn't drink the 5.2 either, does it? Very easy drinking. It's a nice light.
No.
But a nice hoppy bite to it as well. You know, it's not by any means is it sweet and caramelly. It's, you know, it's got the caramel in there, but the hop really cuts through.
Yeah, not, I don't drink lagers that much, but when I do, I'm much more. I mean, Phantom do an amazing New Zealand hops.
Right.
Pils are in Heist did an amazing one, and
yeah,
I do like them when they're like sort of dry hopped.
Yeah.
But you know, when you have something like this, this is. Don't know, you just want to be like sitting by a fire and drinking this up a little bit, and oh, it's gorgeous.
It really is. Yeah No, just going back to what you're saying, like, you know, I agree, but you know, it's when, you know, when does a lager stop being a lager because the level of dry hopping is making it taste like a pale ale? You know, it's kind of
it's very selfish on my part of my own, you know, my own taste of like, oh yeah, it's a New Zealand lager.
That's right, yeah.
I'll get that on
another 5 grams of hops of me. But no, good beer. I wanted to come back actually and mention that doing a little bit of research this morning on the Hive, I looked at your company's house listing, which I do almost every guest on this podcast actually, because it's a great way of digging into when you were founded, also figuring out who owns the business. But the thing that really struck me this morning was that you registered on the 17th of February 2020. That was the very week that we started This Week in Craft Beer, which is pretty mad. Yeah, so we... we launched This Week in Craft Beer first, newsletter only, so the podcast didn't follow until July actually, but we started the newsletter in February, and our first issue of the newsletter we published the week of Cloudwater Friends and Family, which was, that was the last time they ran it actually.
Oh, wow.
February 2020. So yeah, you know, we share the same genesis, which is for what it's worth.
Oh, cry, I think that was the first time we'd saw this place actually.
Yeah.
And obviously not soon.
No, you obviously, some months later, you've actually got the business open.
Well, not soon after that, it was COVID, wasn't it?
Of course it was,
so
yeah. Like within a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah, that put a bit of a stopper in the works.
I think it's worth talking a bit more about the location here, because you're in a strip mall, I think the Americans would call it. It's basically small parade of shops, not a town centre, but you know, you do have five or six businesses along here. But brilliantly located, I think. You know, almost opposite Crowthorne Railway station, which is on the main line from Reading to Gatwick, so you know, reasonably frequently served in both directions, but in a really nice village, you know, surrounded by you know, some, if you want to head west from here, you know, some of the largest residential property in Britain, I should think, you know, some very very luxurious housing in this direction, but you know, some more affordable housing, you know, in the other direction. So you know, a nice
that's
a,
where I am
a nice mix of you know, residential sort of, you know, potential footfall here. And you know, so I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about the business as a whole. You know, very much a cafe at this time of day when we're recording at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but sort of pivots nicely and smoothly into being, you know, more of a, you know, taproom bar kind of affair later in the day. So what's the, you know, how does that work, and what's the thought process behind it?
Well, it kind of sinks in a little bit with the location. Where we are, we're actually not in there's the main village of Crowthorne, which is nearly 2 miles away.
Yeah.
So we're just in a parade by the train station.
Yeah.
And notoriously, there's never been anything here. So there's not a bar anywhere for about 2 miles. It wasn't really any reason to shop or stop here.
No.
You know, so... when we came in, it kind of gave everyone that lives here, because it's a big amount of people here.
Yeah.
We wanted to have it as more, you know, like a a community place and somewhere that locals could come and drink, and you know, we kind of get them into craft beer eventually.
Of course you do.
As it stands. But we kind of knew it because we knew the area. We knew that this place was, it was kind of crying out for it.
Yeah.
And the building sold itself to us anyway. And obviously having the train station there.
Yeah.
Massive, massive plus. But in terms of like the trade and how we run.
Yeah.
We open, you know, everyone gets here at 8:30. We open at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
And it is a pure, you know, independent coffee shop. So yeah, people come in and treat it as that.
Yeah.
And it's got its own, we've got our own customer base, which is really cool, really dog friendly. So
yes,
my god, it's awesome. There's just so many like, I've got a cat, I don't need to buy a dog anymore.
No,
I've got about 30 here. Yeah, so got... it's really good.
Get all the exposure to dogs you need.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes me about 10 minutes to get in sometimes.
And then
seemingly it just kind of just slowly changes throughout the day. It gets a little bit more beery, the bottle shots gets hammered, and you know, it's in a good way. But loads of our customers come in the morning and then we'll come back in the evening,
yeah,
like with a different group of people.
Yeah,
so it's got that kind of atmosphere to it that we kind of, we know everyone by name as well as we can. I have a terrible memory though.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a really nice place to work anyway for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a continental kind of style to it, isn't it? In a sense that, at least in Britain, you know, it was always, you've got, you know, there's cafes over here and there's pubs over there, and they kind of the two, almost like the two clientels that mix, never mind about the two businesses. And you know, this is much more in a sort of a French or a Spanish or an Italian style, where people are coming for a coffee and on the next table somebody's having a beer, and that's all absolutely fine. But you don't see that much, do you, in the UK?
No, and I think the whole sort of atmosphere and the vibe we were going for was basically based on craft beer tap rooms.
Yeah.
Because there's one thing I hate more than anything in shops in general, but especially coffee shops and bars, is just when you go to a counter and it's just you can't see over it. You're kind of looking at someone's forehead, or there's a, you know, tiny little gap that you can see through. Whereas, you know, craft beer tap rooms, as we all know, completely clear, taps are behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted that. It's like a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
It has to be, you know, at least a sort of metre and a half, 2 metres, where you can converse and meet, greet, chat, you know, have people in the line you can speak to. And it just that instantly gives a different feel and like a welcoming
thing.
You're not just a customer coming in.
Yeah,
and like you're moved along a line and all of that. It's actually like, no, you want to spend the time. I can peer over and look at your dog. I can, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was something. So I did a lot of research of going to places and, you know, my little secret shopper with the bars and coffee shops of like, definitely don't like this, really like that.
Yep.
And especially the bigger sort of the chains or the brewery-led pubs of just stuff I didn't like. And then, yeah, I think I kind of gained a bit of a list from that side. And then also, you know, going to Double Barrel with like, what?
Oh, delightful, yeah.
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 I still remember you saying actually on your podcast about the toilets.
Oh,
and it's just
amazing,
like, this is like the first thing I say to everyone. Like,
ridiculous.
Just,
so
but good.
Yours are at that level. I think the only other public business I've been to that, you know, with as nice a toilet as a Double Barrel, and there's no greater praise I can hand down than that. But it's a very high bar they've set, isn't it? You know, and that's just...
Oh, it is. Yeah. But it's that attention to detail.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as you meet Mike and Lucy, you know.
Yeah.
You get it and you're like, of course,
mm-hmm.
of course it's going to be like this.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just such a lovely place to go. Mm.
No, we're super spoiled in Reading to have both them and Phantom. And soon to have the new Siren tap room. I'm super excited about that.
You
haven't heard much about it, have you? I haven't spoken to them about it, but you know, I've read the release on the website, and you know, it's going to be immense when it opens. 35 taps, I think.
It's going to be a behemoth.
Opening in May, outdoor seating as well. You know, just across from the station. It's in, you know, it's on Friar Street, so it's the other side of the new development from the station. But yeah, it's going to
have
tremendous footfall.
It's going to be massive.
Yeah, and you know, it further connects the dots in Reading. You know, which is. We need those dots connected. We've already got, you know, we're already spoiled really with the Nag's Head and Double Barrel and Phantom, but you know, it's going to be great to have Siren in, literally in the town centre as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're such a good... I kind of draw a map for some people in here when they're going to Reading of like, start at, sort of, you can start at Double Barrel.
Yeah.
It's a nice walk to there, a few beers, come back and get the nags.
Mm. Been going to Fox and Hounds a bit more lately as well, actually, which is, you know, I hadn't been there for a while, but you know,
yeah,
I've been there a couple
in,
of times lately.
They were in this weekend, and I said I need to go over, and me and Andy from Dolphin are going in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he works for
us
now, which is ridiculous. So good. But yeah, we're going over there because, again, what a pub.
Yeah.
It's just, we actually, I think I had a meeting in there during... just after lockdown ended,
right,
and it was table service.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I've been there, and I haven't been back since
okay.
we've opened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm buzzing to go back and going to spend I think we've got it in a couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah, really look forward to that, and then do a few stops elsewhere.
Yes,
it's got to be done.
Of course it does. Let's take a short break, Alex.
This Week in Craft Beer is sponsored by Hit Marketing Design, a design agency based in Essex offering professional marketing services across the UK. They specialise in graphic design, brand creation and web design, and can create anything from a fresh logo, new product branding, eye-catching adverts to a fully populated website. No fluff or filler, real design for a competitive world. To find out more, visit hitmarketingdesign.co.uk.
I'm back with Alex from The Hive for the second half of the show. Alex, at this stage every week, I like to have a bit of fun and put the guest on the spot and ask them to tell me what makes them different. What is it you're doing at The Hive to stand out in the somewhat crowded Thames Valley taproom scene?
Oh, good question. I guess our, especially my undying passion of New England's is... bit of a game changer in terms of
drink to that.
Yeah. Our bottle shop is very, very New England heavy because I'm a sucker.
Yep.
So if I see one, I know the brewery, then I know it's going to be good.
Me
and
too.
If I don't know the brewery, then I need to get it in because I need to try it.
Yeah.
So it is, I mean, we have a lot of beer in the bottle shop, but there is a large percentage on New England's just because with there, but aside from that, you know, away from just that style, I really did wanted a sweet shop feel to our bottle shop.
Yep.
Just so you come in and you are kind of, you are like a kid.
Yes.
You know, you're wowed when you walk
this
in.
It's a great description, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also, as we mentioned earlier about the artwork, it is, it is just a thing of beauty to have that many epic designs there that, you know, I like to sort of appreciate by putting them everywhere anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of, I suppose, sets us apart a little bit. I've got a bit of an OCD, so I do pride myself on it looking good most of the time, hopefully.
Yeah.
I want people to come in and be like, it feels like somewhere they can relax in.
Yes.
And it, you know, it's pretty much styled on my shed bar, so it has that. Yeah, I mean, the beer den is literally designed based on my shed bar, so it's like it has that kind of, I like a lot of wood, so I think, but that brings in like earthy, comfy kind of tone. So I want it to be relaxing when you come in and sit down, and a massive amount of games and stuff up there.
I just realized I just kind of tailed off when I was describing this earlier on. So the beer den is the room at the back, which is, I pass the bar and up the sort of corridor a bit, and then you've got, you know, a lovely sort of snug area there, haven't you, which again is, you know, seating for 10 or 12 people depending on how friendly you are, but a lovely sort of enclosed, intimate feeling.
God, I think we've had 30 up there.
Have you really?
Yeah, it was a squeeze, but we've had 30 in there. Yeah, it was part of the stockroom. It was just like, I don't need that much for the stockroom. I just showed you my stockroom.
Yeah.
And we could barely fit in there.
Yeah.
Much better used as a beer den.
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah. So
and yeah, no, it's kind of like a bar within a bar, isn't it? You know, you can sit up there and really feel like you're in your own sort of little world there. You're brilliant.
Yeah, I think it was one of the kind of positives of COVID in a way, because we opened in December of 2020, so it was the day the second lockdown ended.
Yep.
And we had 2.5 weeks of, what was it, that bullshit.
Oh, absurdity. Yeah. I know, when they said they're going to open it. Oh, no, hang on a second, we've opened too soon, better close again.
What was it, like Scotch Egg Gate or something, whatever it was.
Yeah, that
bloody nonsense. So then we shut again after 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
But because we were a bottle shop, we could open and we could do takeaway coffee, so it was fine.
Yeah.
Just luckily we didn't have that many staff anyway to cope with how busy we were in the first 2.5. And also I could look and go, right, I didn't do that.
Gave you time to sort of step back, I guess, and take stock, which is...
Yeah, we didn't have the outside built, so I could build the outside, I could build the back room, and yeah, actually, I think we would have struggled if there wasn't a third lockdown, in a way, because we weren't prepared for how busy it was.
Yeah.
My kind of forecast was lean, shall we say.
Yes, yeah. So you wouldn't have had the staff to cope with normal trading conditions, kind of thing. So it gave you a chance to sort of rethink and replan and actually hire the people you needed.
Yeah, definitely. I think me and my wife, we've got two little kids, so that side of it as well, juggling that. And this being open 9 till 10 at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, we were talking earlier on about it's great that you've got, you know, you're both a coffee shop and a tap room. But on the other, you know, to sort of look at the opposite perspective, then means you've got to be open 13 hours a day, which is a very, very long shift if somebody's doing that, you know, without help. So it's a
I don't think I've ever done a full whack, which is good. Credit to our staff, who are always amazing. But yeah, it's one of those things. I always think I can see how independent bottle shops struggle.
Yeah.
Luckily we have, and it came out of what we wanted to do anyway in terms of how we wanted to structure the business, and we wanted a coffee shop and a beer shop because we love both.
Yeah.
But it does, one pays the other.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the only trouble is, I guess, is that it's hard getting everything done because the coffee shop's actually really busy as a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And then it goes off straight away over the weekend to a really busy craft beer shop.
Yeah.
So kind of getting everything else done. Mm. I mean, I write the pub quiz at 11 o'clock at night while I'm, you know, watching football highlights and order beer at 6 o'clock in the morning when the kids wake me up. And yeah, it's a lot of like, I fit stuff in when I can.
I mean, you know, on a serious note though, you know, business, you know, pure play bottle shops generally are not perhaps thriving in the UK these days. I mean, you know, it's been fairly sort of widely commented on and reported that that's a tough business to be in. Bottle shop tap rooms, bit better. You know, you've got kind of two strings to your bow. Here you've got the coffee shop as well. So, you know, how essential do you think it is to have those, you know, to have those multi sort of function businesses to really thrive in this market?
Oh, I think you need something else apart from, just a bottle shop, unless you're solely doing it yourself, but then you're there all the time, and I guess then you start to resent it as opposed to
absolutely.
Whereas I think with this, because we're passionate about kind of all aspects of it, and massive caveat is the fact that we've got so many dogs in.
Yeah,
we like dogs. It's like such a mentally good place to be. Is that even if you're stressed, you know, you've got 10 dogs in, you can just like spend 2 minutes with.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I don't know, it's a release.
If you like dogs, it's brilliant. Yeah. There's something magical, isn't there, about you know, stroking a dog and just, you know, it kind of de-stresses you, doesn't it?
But I guess on a more, you know, serious like business note, I guess, people often say to me, like, oh, you must be rolling in it because it's always busy. And you're like, it's not a pub. Like,
no.
You're not buying beer for X amount that, you know, off Green King and, you know, they're giving you. You're buying it at a premium because it is a premium product.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I'm sure publicans will probably argue with the fact that they're not rolling in it either. But it's a good point. You know, you're paying premium prices for premium products.
You can. There's certain stuff I don't buy when I'm looking at buying stuff because I can't justify selling it for putting on the markup.
I guess US beers particularly, but you know, maybe Scandinavian beers as well, and maybe, you know, at a price where you start to think,
that there's some I won't name them, there's some, like, you know, UK breweries that you think, like, that's you've priced that to be an elite price, and I'm not going to put it on and charge my customers this when, you know, you have,
what's the most you ever charged for a third in here?
Four.
Really?
I think.
Wow.
Oh, no, I lied. There was like a 15% stout, I think, that went on. And there might have been a Rivington, maybe.
Yeah.
God, that was
worth every penny, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you wouldn't drink more than a third of it. Jeez,
no,
it was. Yeah, that was amazing. But no, I think there is a logical ceiling in a way.
Yeah.
That, especially as we because we're a coffee shop, I think we have a range of customers in who aren't just craft beer customers.
I mean, you referred to this earlier on, you're bringing people along the journey, aren't you? And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, since you've been trading 4 years, come in here, you know, with no idea about craft beer, with all due respect, I mean, that's not a criticism. And I'm sure they're now coming back on a Friday and Saturday night and getting stuck into your tap menu, which is brilliant, you know, but...
Yeah, it's a really like new sort of people we've got in who are locals or have just found us and come to us. We kind of know, I certainly do, and I think some of my staff do, we know what hops they like and what styles they like. So they come in and I can literally clock them if it's busy and just hold up a finger, you know, not that finger.
Yeah, but only, several fingers.
Fingers. Like you're drinking tap three because that's you.
Yeah.
Or like you need to drink that. That's got your Zaka in it. Like,
and that's what really elevates experience to customers, isn't it? You know, people. You know, you can't buy that type of service.
But then, and then that like evokes conversation with other people. Like, oh, what's so good about tap three? Oh, mate, try it. Like, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
And you know, people that just like West Coast.
Well, I mean, you know, we were in 2 or 3 weeks ago when you had the Rivington tap takeover, and I had that exact conversation with you know, a local couple sitting next to me with a lovely little grey whippet sitting on the bench. They're probably in every week, I suspect, you know. But anyway, you know, we were cane in the Rivingtons, and you know, and they were saying, oh, what's that? And we said, oh, man, you've got to have this one. It's absolutely to die for. And, you know, and they were drinking them as well. And it was just a nice interaction with people that were, you know, had that interest in sort of broadening their experiences a bit. So yeah, brilliant.
To be fair, actually, I do remember I heard you before I saw you that night.
And I think people often have that experience.
But I heard you commenting on Fog.
Yeah.
I was just like, there's only one person that can be.
Oh, man. I mean, that's a special beer. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a pretty...
I've just seen they've just done Little Fog and Double Fog's coming out. So I've sent a message like, damn you. That was my opening gambit to them. It was like, damn you.
Yeah.
How can I not order this?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I can take any credit for that, but when I last had Ben on the podcast, they'd done Double Fog. And I said to them, are you not seriously going to make, you know, like a fog day? You know, it should be...
Fog trilogy.
You know, yeah, this should be a part of the craft beer calendar in the same way that Chubbles is from Cloudwater and Putty is from Verdon. You know, you've got a brand here that you should be really taking to the next level. You know, and you should have a table fog and a single fog and a double fog and a triple fog and a quadruple fog if such a things are still brewed. And so that, you know, that they should be really leaning into that brand, and you know, tap rooms up and down the country would take a keg of each of them just sight unseen. They're going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, actually, they didn't even have kegs of it, but I've ordered three of them.
Nice.
Just on the off chance they're going to be brewing it, like,
yep.
I'll have them. But even when I order it now, I order at least two cases for myself. Just sit in a cold room. But then I sold half of it just because everyone kept asking me because we ran out of it so quickly. I was like, oh, you're drinking from my stash now.
Excellent. I cannot delay any longer talking about this second beer we've moved on to, Alex. Mm. This is Plenty of Clouds 2024 edition from Phantom. 8% double IPA. Tasting notes say, probably the best Sabro we've ever got our hands on, plus a Zaka, Nectaron, and Idaho 7. You would not be able to keep your greasy mitts off. I'm sort of running out of superlatives to describe Phantom's New England IPAs. You know, there are some amazing breweries in New England IPAs, so that's a hell of a competitive space. But, you know, I think Phantom have really, really raised their game in the last couple of years. Not that they needed to. But, you know, we're very lucky to have them locally, and this is a great example of Phantom, you know, at their best. So, what a beer.
Oh, it's just, it's not even a word, it's just it's a sound, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, in fact, I poured these for us to drink, and one of our customers was ordering coffee and just went, that's a bit cloudy.
Yeah.
I was like, hell yes it is, like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I did my token, hold it up to the light, and I'm
that's
like, you can't see through that. That's beautiful.
Quite right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've obviously been lucky enough to brew some collaboration beers with Phantom, and just, what a brewery.
Yeah.
Like, they're just killing it. Like, some of the beers they do, so good.
Yeah.
And so local to us as well, so what a treat.
I mean, I'm lucky enough to, you know, that they are my closest craft brewery from where I live, and I, you know, I'm in there almost every weekend, probably 4 out of 5, to be honest with you. And they, you know, it just seems to get busier and busier down there. It's just, you know, I love how people are discovering them. It's, you know, where they're located, you need to know it's there, otherwise you wouldn't find it. You know, they're you know, in a sort of Victorian back street kind of thing, aren't they? You know, so you, if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't stumble across it. But, you know, Reading is starting to discover it, and, you know, and not just Reading, but much further afield than that.
I know how to get there from the train station.
Yeah.
But every time I still take the wrong
turn. Yeah, I know, it's every absolutely time. Bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
You can do it with your eyes shut, but with your eyes open, you're
turning left and right and left and right and left, and, you know, you would always, you know, you get to a junction. I've been there so many times, it doesn't happen to me anymore, but I can relate to what you're saying.
Oh no, it's always the last left. I always
you
go
get
right.
to a junction, you think, is it left or right? And it's just, and it's even worse. You're trying to drive there because half the roads are blocked off. You know, with bollards, so you can't drive in there. You just, unless you've got, if you don't rely on your sat nav, you just won't get there.
I had to ring Dane up when we were brewing there once because I couldn't find it. I was just. Yeah, I think something was shut, and you can come round to it's blocked off.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be like mashing in. I was like, dude, I'm like,
yeah. I mean, you can see
I'm
it
here.
As well.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm literally here.
Outside the bollards, 100 yards away.
Yeah, it was when they were building the houses across the road, and there was a dude in a hard hat telling me I couldn't go through. I'm like, mate, I'm going there, and I'm brewing a beer. Please let me through. And he did, which is good.
I'm on official brewery business.
Yeah.
Right?
I think I gave him a beer.
This
actually.
Is important. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not going to drone on any more about Phantom because everybody knows how wonderful they are. So, but this is a great beer, and it's going down a treat at just after 3 o'clock on a Monday afternoon. So, you know, what would you rather be doing than drinking Phantom Double IPAs in the sunshine? Well, not in, but looking out the window at the sunshine.
It's getting there. Well, we had Damien earlier dropping a beer off.
We
and
did.
He was wearing shorts. So, first off, sin of the season.
Alex, what have you got coming up events-wise? You got any tap takeovers you want to announce, or any, you know, any other events that you can tease?
Tap takeovers I am in the works with. We've got a few lined up, but I mean, as we were saying earlier, I couldn't help but get another pallet of Revington. So,
no.
We'll do a night for that, probably beginning of. Well, we know April, aren't we? Beginning of May, I think we'll do a takeover.
Nice.
Because, Jesus, they just released the mint chocolate stout as well. Like, oh my God. It's just too much.
I love
get in.
Mint chocolate, you can't beat it.
Yeah. But mint chocolate stout, no one does it. And it's like, I'm having that. It's 10% as well. Get it in. So, we'll have that. We're just kicking in a few, going to get a pizza truck down here on Wednesday, every other Wednesday. Which is like a non-quiz night.
Okay.
Because we do quizzes every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then just had a band in Saturday just gone.
Oh.
So we're going to start doing bands.
Great. Where best they set up?
So
I mean, you have to move the furniture around a bit to fit them in, aren't you? We'll see.
Oh, don't. No, last time we chucked the sofa in the charity shop through the front door. So I had to get up at 8 in the morning to get the charity shop, to get the sofa back
get
through
the
coach, so they didn't
yeah.
sell it. They've got a habit of it. They tried to sell my coat the other day. Just put it on the side and they put it on a rail for
Christ.
A tenner.
Yeah.
And he just bought it. 80 what? Quid. Unbelievable.
It's a bargain.
Yeah, it was for someone else. My wallet was in it. But yeah, other than that, we're going to get some more local bands because now I've kind of put the word out a little bit. We've had loads of people come in.
Great.
So I want to get some music on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Just selfishly so I can come down as well. Hopefully not work and
yeah.
have a beer.
Nice.
Yeah, and we've got some collaborations coming up. We're doing another one with Elusive.
Nice.
Hopefully in June, which will be always bloody lovely to work with Andy.
Yeah.
We've just got one released this week, or last week, sorry. Submit, which is...
Oh, Disruption.
With Disruption.
Yeah, brilliant.
Which is part of my ongoing John Carpenter film project, which, if you've been here, you know the men's toilets are filled with, film memorabilia.
Yeah.
There's film references everywhere, so I'm a bit of a John Carpenter fan.
Yeah.
Like 80s. And we make beers based on his films.
Nice.
And go a bit crazy. So I think I haven't told Andy yet, but hopefully our collaboration is gonna be one as well. So just kind of just doing really fun stuff that nothing serious.
No.
Just just enjoyable things.
Mm-hmm. So how do you choose your stock? I mean, you know, I guess your canned stock kind of makes sense. You know, you're ordering the great and the good, you know, from up and down the country, as you know, as best you can get your hands on it. But how do you know, you've only got six kegs, or six keg lines I should say, so that's a harder thing to curate. So, you know, what's the thought process to you know, how you choose your keg beers?
Well, we've got annoyingly a really good array of local breweries.
Yes.
So it's hard not.
It would be easy only to buy local, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, part of our ethos is,
and it's no bad thing. I mean, you know, a lot of businesses like this are differentiating themselves by doing exactly that.
The whole beauty of it is, you know, trying that Dunkel Lager, like, you know, having this dipper. Mm-hmm. It's and knowing that it's gone.
Yeah.
And the next thing is coming. It's the anticipation again. But our ethos was never to have a permanent line, or even a core range. I don't want any core range beers in the shop.
No.
Just because you've seen it before.
I appreciate that, yeah.
Although there is one exception of Oregon Trail.
Okay.
Just because it is the greatest West Coast ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good beer, yeah.
Yeah, you can't not have it.
No.
But yeah, other than that, it is a pure changing keg list of everything. We don't really use distributors, so I try and go direct with everyone.
Nice.
And then it's, you know, if you order bottle shop stock, you can add on a couple of kegs, and it's kind of choosing which ones fit with what else we've got.
How many kegs can you store in your cold room?
It's not the biggest cold room, but I think you probably get like 20 in at a push.
Yeah.
Maybe less if you actually want to get in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a bit of a juggling act in terms of.
A couple of weeks of stock in there typically, or not?
Yeah, no, it depends. Depends on the week.
Yeah.
I do panic a lot.
Do you?
Yeah. So sometimes you work in, like, I think I've ordered enough, and then you don't order the next week.
Then you have a busy Friday night and you're
really. Yeah, and you're like, oh, damn. But then the other week I struggled to get stuff in, so.
Yeah.
I actually had to take a keg to the climbing centre I climb at because they've got a big fridge they don't use, and I put a keg in there. So, you know,
but you've got,
businesses support themselves.
So you've got six taps. Would you normally think in two pails, an IPA, a dipper, and then a couple of wild cards, or what are you thinking?
It'd be nice. I think if we had a bigger cold room, which is something I'd love, we could be as regimented as that.
Yeah.
But I think as long as there's one under five, you know, everything else is game on.
Okay.
So try and either have a stout or a sour on.
Yeah.
And then something different, potentially. Yeah, and then, you know, a big boy.
Yeah.
So
always a big boy.
Yeah, there needs to be a dipper
or an MP.
Plus seven.
Yeah.
And then other than that, you're going to have a good, solid New England. Obviously, because you know, it's the hive.
Because it's the beer of the gods.
Preferably a bit of Nelson in there. You know, around 6.5, the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Would be lovely, and then everything else really just kicking in of like interesting beers that you want to drink.
How do you find the sours selling here?
Sours go really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really well, and it's a strange beast because I don't like sours.
Oh, okay.
In terms of the taste of a sour. I don't have that taste palette for a sour.
No.
But I can appreciate a good sour. I couldn't drink, you know, two pints of one.
No.
But I can appreciate it and go, damn, that's really impressive.
Well, I don't think I've ever drank two pints of a sour, but I love them. You know,
But you can kind of know a good one before you order it, and the profile of it, and again, trust the brewery.
Yeah.
Do they know how to brew one?
Yeah.
And they go. And there's something about a sour, the theatre of it, of seeing it, other people seeing it.
Of course there is, absolutely. Yeah.
But no, we had a staff member's wedding reception here, and they requested a sour.
Right.
And it was a green sour.
Yeah.
So bride and groom came in, their first drink was a green sour. And then the rest, 75 other people came in.
I love what they're having.
Yeah, but they didn't do it based on, it was just because what they were having is because it was green.
Yeah.
So the entire wedding reception and we had it all outside as well. Nice. It was ridiculous. Everyone had a green drink. There's Nans, there's everyone, just with these like plutonic drinks. And it was because everyone saw it and just went, oh, I've never tried that before.
No.
And it's that, but that, it's kind of, sours explain craft beer in a way.
They do.
Of like the theatre and
the
conversation style and the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
He says, even though he drinks in a shed quite a lot of the time on his own. That's me, I mean, not you.
But you're right, it breaks down the conventions, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
it provokes conversation of like, what are you having?
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to a traditional pub, you're sitting next to someone else, beer looks the same.
Yeah.
It's like going to a restaurant where someone's got a secret menu and they've ordered something.
Somebody's in the know.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, it's like the fear of missing out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody's in the know and you're not.
Yeah, it's like Goodfellas are like walking through the back door of the kitchen. Yeah.
My favourite movie.
I'm so pleased I got that in.
good reference. What a movie. Good. All right, Alex, let's get into the home straight then. At this stage of the week, Alex, I like to ask the guest to give what I call a shout out to the little guy. And here I'm asking for you to mention one or more local to you beer businesses that you think are doing a great job promoting independent craft beer. That can be a brewery, another tap room, another bottle shop, maybe a restaurant or a cafe, but somebody you think is doing a great job promoting independent craft beer locally.
Oh wow, this is an interesting question because I've listened to the podcast and a few people have mentioned us before, and it's
quite right.
Yeah, it's bizarre being on the other end. I guess really one of our staff, Greg. If you know the Hive, you know him. He's a character. He's now brewing at Disruption.
Oh, great.
With intentions to start his own brewery.
Fantastic.
Big fella brewing. Yeah, and a big shout out to him. He walked into our lives as a customer, and we then immediately employed him because he was an absolute nerd of craft beer.
Right, fantastic.
He's gone to Disruption to like further the brewing process and learn more about big kits. And yeah, hopefully he's going to start his own brewery. And
has he got premises yet, or he's on the lookout?
No. He's just literally in the kind of process of putting the plan together for investment opportunities and, and everything. But yeah, he can brew. He's a really good guy. Loves his beer. Yeah, absolute character.
Fantastic.
And we've got another guy, Mysterious Brewing, Ken.
Yes.
He's like extremely local to us, down the road.
Adam, actually, Ken's partner, is really local to me. So yeah, we got him covered between the two of us. But yeah, I think Mysterious, really nice sort of crossover between traditional cask styles and modern craft styles. So yeah, great to have those guys local.
Yeah, really good. They are the localist brewery. Only by way of Ken living closest to me.
Okay.
Not in terms of the actual brewery site itself, but
yeah.
I don't know if that counts.
Whatever can count, it's all good.
Yeah. But everyone else, just like literally all the local breweries around us, just go to them.
Well, I mean, we checked them already, haven't we? Siren and Elusive, fantastic, close to here. You know, further afield into Redden, Double Barrel and Fanta, just amazing. We are spoilt in the Thames Valley. You know, if you want to head a bit further east, the way the Windsor scene's developing is fantastic as well, isn't it? You know, with
100%, yeah. Two Flints are smashing it.
Two Flints and Indy Rabble next door to one another, and you know, Windsor and Eaton at the other end of the mile, so superb.
Yeah, we're all good. We just need a bus, a beer bus would be lovely.
Yeah. Well, I spoke to a few people lately on the podcast who are starting to put beer buses together. Most recently talking about one in the Margate area. It's a business opportunity waiting for somebody to grasp, actually, especially if you've got your own minibus. You know, I think if you've got to hire a minibus to do it, you're probably, maybe you're breaking the mold. But if you've got a minibus sitting there doing nothing, there's a business opportunity there for people, I think, to get their arms around and start ferrying people from location to location.
Such a good idea. The Hive was nearly an ice cream van.
Was it?
Yeah. So my first concept for the Hive, whilst sitting on a canal drinking a beer, was to buy an ice cream van, recondition the Mr. Whippy into a tap, and the freezers into fridges.
Makes sense, yeah.
Because canning was just coming through.
Yeah.
Everything was still bottled at the time.
Right, yeah.
But canning was coming through, so you could, it was much more, it made sense to, you could layer
you can
cans
stack more
up.
Cans
like a chest freezer, if you could recondition it.
Yeah.
And it was all good. it was such a good idea, I thought, until I looked into the licenses of, like, you couldn't actually just stop and sell beer. You had to have a location. You had to know every location you'd stop at to get a license. And then I also looked at hunchback. If you're leaning over an ice cream truck, you'd end up with a hunchback. And I was like,
Is that a thing?
Yeah, definitely.
Ice cream provides hunchback. Is that kind of
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. I don't know any, but
no,
I'm just.
But it makes sense.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, could easily be. Yeah.
That was probably more of a concern.
I think
than
it was
the
a narrow escape, to be honest. Yeah. Dodged a bullet there.
Saying that, you know, probably got a hunchback now anyway.
Well, moving swiftly on, let's get into the wrap up question, Alex. And here, I need to know, what would be your ultimate happy hour? Three parts to this question. Where would you be? Who would you be with? And most specifically, what beer would you be drinking? And just one qualifier on this question is the beer doesn't necessarily need to be typically available at your chosen location. So for this fantasy world, you can bring the beer with you, perfectly chilled and ready to serve to your friends and family or whoever you've invited along.
Damn. I mean, how many people are going to have?
As many as you like.
As many as I like?
Yeah.
That seems like a loaded question.
Well,
I could just have everyone.
Well, you could, but that would be a bit sick.
No, this is true. I'll go for my wife, Emma.
Good.
And in Menorca.
Ah.
Somewhere I like to go back to. Okay. I mean, I've only been twice.
Any craft beer there?
Yeah. There's a bottle shop called Birrer O'Clock.
Birrer O'Clock.
Yeah, it is epic.
Okay.
We went there before the Hive was open.
Okay.
And I spoke to the guy.
Draft as well as...
Yeah, he had Draft on, yeah. Like Basque Land and... Yeah. I can never remember.
Garage, probably? Last time?
No, it didn't have Garage. It was a weird name for a Spanish brewery.
Okay.
It was like an English name.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, really, no. Stuart something.
No.
But he was a really nice guy, but he had like Wylam, Siren, like bottles all around the shop. And I was like, dude, you know, I spoke to him. I bought a print actually, which I think is in the shop somewhere.
Nice.
And he was just about to have a baby. Mm. And I was like, look, dude, I'm gonna come back. And then 3 years later, we went back. Well, I was with friends before, me and Em and the kids went back. And I went there, and like literally, little baby was running around, like similar size to one of mine. And his bottle shop, there's more taps on. There's like three times as many taps on.
Lovely.
Had an outside seating area, which he didn't have before. It was just like thriving. I was like, yes.
Fantastic.
So we shared like pictures of our shops and it was wicked.
That's brilliant.
And had a really interesting...
So this is there a... I've never been to Menorca. Are there different towns or is it just
No,
like
it's
one?
Like the
is
main...
One, yeah.
There's like a main town.
Okay.
And it's there. I think it's on Untappd.
Yeah.
And
it's called Beer...
Birrer O'Clock.
Birrer O'Clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lovely guy.
Fantastic.
Great island as well.
Yeah.
Just pretty chilled out.
Hmm.
But I would be there.
Yeah.
Not in Birrer O'Clock. And I can't even remember where the hell we stayed. But there's an amazing coastline.
Yeah.
And the really high up viewpoint.
Like cliffs and that.
Yeah, banging. And I would be up there.
Okay.
And I would have an iced bucket with an ice cold glass fresh from the freezer. And I think it's got to be fog.
It's obviously going to be a New England IPA from what you're
saying.
But
one of my customers invited us around for a barbecue and we went round and he's like, dude, you're having this glass has been in the freezer for 2 weeks and like this fog has been in there for like, you know, the same amount of time, and he came over and he was just like so happy that he'd brought me this frozen glass and poured fog into it, and I swear to God it's the best.
Yeah,
it's one of the best sips I've ever had.
Wow.
Ever. Of just a singular beer of like, dude, you have
nailed
this.
Doesn't get any better than that.
Like,
yeah,
it was so good.
Love it. Attention to detail.
Yeah. Maybe he can come as well.
All right, so Emma.
Eddie and Zoe.
Yeah.
And Greg can be there as well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, that's a very satisfactory answer to Ultimate Happy Hour. You know, sometimes I get to this stage of the podcast and I've really got to pick holes in the, you know, what the guests have said and challenge different aspects of it. But no, I think you nailed it there.
As
indeed, I think you've nailed this venue. I mean, you know, this is a pleasure to experience, Alex. I think, you know, you've got a great business going on here. It's lovely to see it thriving. And anybody that hasn't been here, you know, needs to get themselves, you know, on the train to Crowthorne, which is literally 150 yards from your front door, Crowthorne Station. You know, there's no excuse for not checking this out if you're anywhere in the west of London or generally in the southeast of England. So yeah, it's been fun, Alex. I'm looking forward to seeing how you thrive in the next few years, but I'm sure you will.
Mate, thank you very much. Still a bit of a shock, to be honest. Like, I'm used to listening to this, listening to like amazing breweries being on here, and little old me in my little old shop. So thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.